Hey, hey, this is Tasani Durrett, and this is how I create.
Welcome back to This Is How We Create. My name is Martine Severin, your host. Today we have Tasani Durrett in the guest chair. Tasani is a multidisciplinary visual artist whose work explores identity and connectivity. She holds a BA in architecture from the University of Arizona School of Architecture, where the Black human experience greatly influences her work. Painting became an outlet for releasing emotions and regaining strength after escaping an 8-year abusive relationship in 2022. Tasani's artistic journey began as a quest for personal freedom and breaking free of psychological and emotional chains holding her back from embracing her true self. Durrett has participated in several national exhibitions, including her solo show in Orlando, the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, Orlando Museum of Art, Hyatt Regency Hotel in Orlando, Spectrum Art, Basel, Miami, Prison, and African Art Fair, Miami. Her notable accolades includes a feature in the Orlando Foundation for Architecture Archives, 1919 Magazine, Black, and Sugarcane Magazine. Tasani has a forthcoming exhibition at Expo Chicago and at Focus Art Fair in New York in the spring of 2024. Tasani, welcome to the show.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Martine. And that was an awesome intro. I really appreciate that.
Well, Tasani, I have to say, you know, I'm a little bummed only because I'm going to miss this year's Expo Chicago. So I won't be able to see your work there. So apologies in advance, especially since you're coming back to your hometown.
Oh, man, no worries. I'll be back. Don't you worry at all.
Tasani, you grew up in Chicago. Can you tell us the story about how you became exposed to the arts at a young age?
Yeah, so growing up, it's always been me and my mother. She would take me to all of the museums and the libraries. Growing up on the south side of Chicago, it was a way for me to get that exposure culturally, to learn more about the city. And I think those moments going to museums with my mother really helped develop the way I see the world through a cultural lens, if that makes sense. And that really inspired me to pursue a more creative life.
Do you remember those early moments and in terms of what kind of exhibitions you would see when you would go to museums with your mom?
Yeah, I remember specifically, I always remember this time we went to the Art Institute of Chicago, and I remember seeing an exhibition, and it was a lot of figurative work, more contemporary style. I don't remember seeing artwork about me, you know, people of color, something that could really resonate with me. But I do remember feeling a sense of connection in a way. I was young. I want to say I was probably like 6 or 7 at the time. And I just remember I was eager for more, but I didn't know what yet. You know, like I didn't know at the time if I was eager for more introspective art, if I was interested in more seeing more of art of people of color, of Black people. I didn't know at the time, but it was this like want for something that I wanted to see more in the museums. Like I was getting fulfilled to an extent, but I do remember I always wanted to go to all the museums, you know, along like Michigan, all downtown, just to learn more about what else was out there. It was almost a way to travel and learn about the world without traveling. You know, it was a way to understand the culture of the city and beyond. So that was pretty cool.
What was it like for you to visit these museums in Chicago with your mom?
When my mother took me to the museums, like the Art Institute of Chicago, Museum of Science and Industry, and all the other galleries and museums downtown, it was a way to travel the world and experience different cultures without actually, you know, physically traveling the world. It was a way that we could learn the culture of the city and beyond.
Tasani, how did you come to fall in love with architecture?
I love this question. It's an interesting story. It was I believe I was in 9th or 10th grade, you know, that's kind of the time when you start trying to figure out what it is that you're going to do with your life, right? And I knew I wanted to do something artistic and something that was of the experience, but I didn't know what I was going to do. I watched a movie. The name is escaping me, but it was about a landscape architect. And I was like, man, what is landscape architecture about? So I did some research and I actually wanted to do landscape architecture, but back then it was suitable to, you know, pursue architecture and then master in landscape architecture. And so I was like, okay. So I actually started going to the Chicago Architectural Foundation. They had like workshops for students and I fell in love with it instantly. I just learning more about the built environment, how the experience ties into the space. And from there, I took it, ran with it. When I graduated, I decided not to pursue master's in landscape architecture because I fell in love with architecture so much. So that's how that all started.
It must have been quite a bit of a shock to leave Chicago because Chicago has a very distinct landscape to go to Arizona. What was that transition like for you?
It was definitely eye-opening. The first thing I think of is the climate. You know, Chicago, being born and raised in the Midwest and then going to the Sonoran Desert, totally different in how you design, how you interact with others. So it was a little bit of a culture shock at first, but it was really interesting to learn about different ways to design in different climates. You know, that was something that I didn't really understand until I went to Arizona and started studying there. And it was also interesting living in the desert. You know, I thought I knew what I was going to expect, had no idea like the temperature swings that happen there, why certain built forms are built the way there as opposed to Chicago. I know I get all the time, you know, well, architecture, Chicago, you know, the skyline, that's where the Bauhaus movement, you know, started, where architecture was essentially like birthed, right? So a lot of people would ask me, why not stay in Chicago? The reason was because I got so much exposure. I wanted to go somewhere to a different environment where I could learn a different side of architecture and be able to meet other people and just get a different type of experience than what I was seeing growing up in Chicago.
Well, you talk about how the Black human experience really influences your work. And that started for you really at the University of Arizona. Can you talk to me a little bit more about what you mean by that experience?
Absolutely. I found myself very focused on how our experiences as people influenced spaces that we build and vice versa. So I really dug deep into my capstone. It was my final year of architecture. That's when we have free rein to do any type of project we want anywhere in the world. Decided to do a project in Montreal. It was along a really prominent river or canal, I should say. And it almost separated parts of the Montreal community. So I started digging deep into the histories of the different ethnicities, et cetera, that used to live there and that live there now, and how the canal brought people together. So I thought that was really interesting and how that can tie into architecture, like how our stories, our experiences, our backgrounds can shift depending on the built environment. And we can also inspire what is built because of our stories, our backgrounds, if that makes sense. So tying that into the Black experience, it had a lot to do with me personally. I was the only Black woman in my architecture class. And so that for that 5-year period, I was the only, you know, Black girl. It was a 5-year architecture program. And so that was always in the back of my head when I designed. You know, how would it feel in this space from a cultural perspective? Does it matter? You know, and I was like, it does matter. And I think it also ties into my experiences growing up going to museums. You know, you didn't even see many of us there. And I noticed that when I was little, you know, I noticed that. And I think all of that started to culminate with how I looked at the Black experience in certain spaces. Why aren't why don't we see many of us there? Why do we see a lot of us in other places? You know, is it due to placement within communities? Like food deserts are a great example. You know, we can go into incarceration, we can go into redlining. There's so many things that like ties into it. And I mean, to this day, it's still interesting to me, and I'm still learning so much about how the human, Black human experience correlates with architecture.
I grew up mostly in Boston, and so redlining, man, we see it quite a bit in Boston. It's also interesting to me, and I always dream about, if I could, I think I would write books about how neighborhoods shift over time, because they're always... You always see, especially in Boston, it's a prime example. And I come to see it more and more as to where I'm living here in Chicago, where you would have one type of an immigrant group that is in a city. And then that group shifts because another group comes in, and so on and so forth. So much so that in Chicago and in Boston, the spaces where a lot of Black communities are were once Jewish communities. You'll see Hebrew written on different buildings. It's just really interesting to me how it is that we inhabit the spaces that we inhabit and how the communities shift over time.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I can't wait for you to write that book.
I don't know if I would. But I think if I do, it might be a long time until I do it. And maybe the reason why I'm interested in it is because I, you know, we're immigrants to the U.S. And because of that, you know, we've come to a space and are trying to understand not only the space that we are in, but how we are placed in that space and how people understand us because we are placed in a space. And so much of your identity doesn't come from you, but it also comes from how people perceive you. It's a great balance.
It is. And what you're talking about also reminds me of Theester Gates. I love his work. He's
yes.
local to Chicago, and how he transformed the bank on Stony Island and turned it into a library, how he's transforming dilapidated buildings into cultural spaces for the community. And it's mind-blowing. I think we need to see more of that in other cities across the world, because that changes people, you know, in a positive way, I feel like, because now it's allowing people to be safe in spaces that probably aren't as, like you were saying, aren't as accepting, you know, otherwise.
And it's not just city spaces. It's not just urban spaces. Oftentimes it is nature itself in terms of who is allowed to participate, who is allowed to experience those spaces. And there are unwritten rules about who can. And we had Chad Brown on the podcast. He's a photographer and based in Portland, if I remember correctly. And he has a program for both vets and kids who live in urban areas, Black kids who live in urban areas, to go and to fly fish. Because fly fishing it's really meditative. And it's also a way of building community, as well as a way of slowing down and interacting with nature. And when we think about how we interact with spaces and being people of color, we also have to start thinking about, and I'm sure a lot of people are already doing this, but also thinking about how we not only inhabit urban spaces, but how we inhabit the world. And how do we just keep showing up and saying we're here?
Yeah.
At this point, I would love to transition a little bit from you getting a degree in architecture. And from what I understand, you left several days later and boarded a plane to Florida to start working. How were those first few months and years like for you being an architect and working in architecture?
It was definitely a marathon of learning and experiencing what the professional side of architecture looks like. It's like this giant leap from, you know, architecture school to being in the professional world. I felt like it was drinking from a fire hose, so to speak. But in that learning, I feel like I developed really quickly because of that, and learning more of the politics and the less fun and shiny parts of architecture, you know, looking at code, looking at safety. We talk about it, you know, in architecture school, but we don't get into the nitty gritty of it, you know, until you go into the corporate side or the professional world, because now it's the real deal. This is actually going to be built. You know, you need to make sure that people who are inhabiting these spaces are going to be safe. And I've done solely commercial work, so I've only done like one residential project. So I'm speaking solely in terms of like office buildings, large commercial projects such as that, you know, apartment complexes, et cetera. So long story short, it was a huge learning curve the first few years of understanding and connecting what I learned from school to now, you know, kind of putting it to fruition, thinking about the actual built space from drawing construction sets to actually building it on field. I got a lot of both sides. And I think the field side was something that really intrigued me, because not only do you get to see it being, you know, being built from the trailer as you're working from it, but you're actually able to go out and problem solve with a ton of other stakeholders, being the engineers, the trades, superintendent, you know. It all becomes real, you know, because it's imaginary in school. And now it's like, okay, this is real, you know.
And that must be so cool for you. And how far in are you now?
So now I am a licensed architect of a few years now. However, I went to the quote unquote dark side. I'm now on the construction end of it as a virtual design and construction engineer. So I'm more in the digital space. That, just long story short, I work with 3D modeling to make sure that we catch things that may not be constructible before we actually start, you know, going out in the field. So that is awesome, because it's a safety parameter, right? So, you know, when we go out in the field, we're not running into issues that could potentially harm our field team out there. It's great for the client because we save on time and money. So it's really interesting. And then I'm still able to work with the design team with you know, other architects and engineers, but I'm also working with the construction team. So it's kind of like that, being that liaison between both worlds, now that I've had, you know, the design side for about four and a half years. And now for the past 2.5 years, I've been on the construction side. So now it's kind of like bridging that gap or that communication, which is pretty cool.
That does sound really cool. So you talked about how you left an abusive relationship and how that helped you to pursue a career in art. Can you tell us the story about how you came to turn to art?
Yeah, absolutely. So about 2.5 years ago, early 2022, I started having, it's going to sound a bit wild, but I was having these intuitive feelings of wanting to be free, like wanting to be liberated. No idea what was going on. So I was telling my partner at the time, you know, how I was feeling, and it was very dismissive. So I turned to therapy to try and fix, because it would come. At first, it felt like a whisper, you know. And then it started like screaming inside of me. I don't know what's going on. So went to therapy, started to understand more about myself again, because I didn't realize that I was people pleasing, you know, and doing that, I was losing a lot of myself. You know, I was like, I don't people please. I don't, you know, I say no, I was people pleasing. And so it turns out that want to be free was needing to find myself again and to break free from what I didn't even know was an abusive relationship at the time. I can't believe it took like 8 years for me to really figure that out. And while I was figuring that out, I took up a paintbrush to release what I was feeling. I was feeling a lot of pain, confusion. I felt lost, you know, for a while. And so painting allowed me to release, and it brought me joy. So a lot of my pieces, or all of my pieces, are very empowering and uplifting. So it was almost like turning that pain into beauty and hope, which I, again, I didn't even realize until after I finally ended it and was able to speak on the truth of I was in an abusive relationship. Now I can start rediscovering myself again.
Had you painted before?
No, I drew a lot. I was ink pen on paper type of artist. So I would always draw my sketchbook, especially outside of architecture, you know, outside of working and being an architect. It was fun to grab my sketchbook and draw people. I would always love to draw people and sketch, and that's how it started. But I never picked up the paintbrush until a couple of years ago.
Wow, that's astounding. Gosh, talk to me about how the whole thing kind of built up. Because, you know, you started by picking up a paintbrush, and then now you are going to be exhibiting your work at Expo Chicago, and you've had solo shows. I mean, this ain't nothing, right? So talk to me about how it all evolved.
Oh my goodness. It started during the lockdown. So 2020, and it's wild because right before the lockdown is when I got licensed, and I told myself, I was like, work to get licensed, you know, because you have to take exams. There's a lot involved. You have to get so many hours to become licensed. And I wanted to pursue my art career earlier than when I did, but I wanted to focus on my license first. And then I was like, okay, once I get my license, then I'll go and, you know, start getting more into my art journey. And, you know, feeling so much of what was going on with the BLM movement, the Crown Act, there were so many things going on. And that's when I took to digital art at the time. And so I would draw these, what I call one line drawings or contour line drawings, where I don't lift my hand until it's done. And it was a way for me to challenge myself mentally, challenge my hand, and see what I could create from that. So I do a lot of thinking while I'm creating, before and while I'm creating. And so after the lockdown, I was really feeling the need and want to be connected to community again. It was really taking a toll on me. And I'm as introverted as I am, I still, you know, I feel like we all, if you're more introverted or more extroverted, you know, that community is really important. So I started to be in local shows. There's like local shows throughout Orlando. And that's when I realized that my artwork was bigger than me, because
I have a question. Because you just really went for it, right? To the point where you're like, I'm gonna enter and be in a local show. How did you create your portfolio? How did you come to finding information out about these shows? Tell me more details, please.
So when I set my eye on something, I go full force on it. And I was like, okay, I want to get more involved in the art community. I just want to put my art out there. And so I started researching. I started reaching out to folks that I already knew, you know, prior to the lockdown. And I was like, hey, do you know any opportunities? I started reaching out to local galleries and museums and started finding out a lot of information. Like, a little bit of research goes such a long way. And then the connections that I have, if it weren't for the connections that I have and nurturing those connections, I wouldn't get like 90% of the opportunities that I have. So I'm really grateful for that. And I just went full steam ahead. I think being vulnerable helps too. Just being authentic and being vulnerable has opened up a lot of doors for me. And I would show my process a lot, like on social media, because at the time, like when we were doing lockdown, that was all I had. And so that also helped me to become more fearless and putting my work and myself out there. But when I get my eye on something, I just go full force to it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm curious as to what you would say when you reached out to local galleries. Would you call them? Would you email them? And when you got them on the phone or an email, what did you say? Did you have a script? I'd love to know.
I definitely was an emailer. Because I just felt like I can like talk a little bit, kind of schmooze them over a little bit more with an email. Because at the time I couldn't like go in person yet. So email, I did have a bit of a script. You know, I would ask them if there are any opportunities, you know, what were their goals looking like post-COVID, post-lockdown. I was really interested in how the art market was going to shift. So I also tried to, you know, try to start a conversation and build some rapport. IG was a huge conduit for me to reach out to folks. But yeah, I think I just started conversations with people, and not gonna lie, most of them never responded back, or some of them did and they were like, no, we're not, you know. There's quite a few open calls too, I think. Like if you join local organizations, like arts organizations, they have like opportunities listed up on their website, which I started learning about real quickly as well. So that helped me get the foot in the door too, was like applying to these open calls.
Gosh, that's so wonderful. I'm so pleased for you. Obviously, I have more questions. How did you come to figure out what your style is as you proceeded in creating more and more pieces of art?
So the more I did those contour line drawings, the more I wanted to experiment with how far I could go with that. I knew I wanted to keep that technique, but I just wanted to see how I could start to find my own language. And I started thinking about, so I'm a figurative artist, kind of like a figurative abstraction artist. I feel like my work is kind of a mixture of both. And I started to see a pattern of how I drew, and I didn't see it anywhere else. The more I evolved, the more I found my language. But it took, you know, months. It's never something overnight. Eventually, when I felt that I found my language, and the more shows I would participate in, I would receive that from people. Like, I've never seen this type of work before, or I've had, you know, art enthusiasts, art collectors come to me and they'd be like, for 20 plus years, I've never seen this before. So that, of course, made me feel great in knowing that my language and technique is speaking to others and is a refreshing thing to see, because it's never been really seen before. Once I started getting into painting, I still stuck to my contour line technique, but then I started adding color to my work. And in doing that, of course, I wanted a challenge again. So I went to pointillism. I love the pointillistic style and technique. And so I merged that with the contour line drawing. And so that's how my pieces really started to have like this layer of information to my style.
Oh, gosh, it's so true. You know, the only way of getting your style, getting to know what you want to do, is by doing it. There's no other way around it. At this point, I am really curious about how your work comes to you. When you have a piece of canvas and you've primed your canvas and you're ready to go, or maybe before you even get to the canvas, how do you visualize it? How does it come? Can you walk us through your process?
Absolutely. My sketchbook is an explosion of sticky notes, writing, poetry, sketches. I feel sorry if anyone ever discovers a lost sketchbook of mine, because they'll probably look at it like she had a lot going on. No, I love reading and I love documentaries and I love talking to people and learning about their stories. That's what inspires me. A lot of the books that I read, you know, you got your James Baldwin, love James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, bell hooks. I've recently been reading Cole Arthur Riley. I love her work. Her work has really been inspiring me in this season. This here, Flesh, was one of my favorites. And then she just came out with another book called Black Liturgies. Reading, speaking with others.
I'd love to know, Tasani, what exactly about her work resonates with you?
Oh man, she gives a very introspective look on how we interact with ourselves within the world, with each other. She talks about, for example, like fear. It's okay to be fearful in moments, but to not be consumed by it. Because certain emotions like rage, fear, you know, lament, we give them like a bad rep, you know, and I feel that that's not healthy. It's okay to be in a situation of rage, but don't let it consume you. it's great to be joyful, but not everybody's going to be joyful 100% of the time, you know? And so I think giving us that grace to feel how we feel and take a step back and ask ourselves, you know, why are we like this in this moment? Or I am like this and dot, dot, dot. So she really brings forth this authenticity, this realness. When you read her book, it's almost like she is there sitting with you, talking to you. And that's how I hope my work is when others experience it and get to be in a space with my work.
So you said that you have a really wonderful sketchbook where you have all your sources of inspiration in that sketchbook. So from there, tell us what happens next when it comes to creating a piece.
Yeah, so I typically will do a few more iterations of whatever has inspired me in my sketchbook. And from there, I let my hand and my mind create. I don't look at reference images or anything like that. That's hard for me, which is weird, but I let my imagination flow. And sometimes, even when as I am painting on the canvas, sometimes it will even be a slightly different iteration of the sketch that I was working on prior, you know, the multiple iterations of sketches. It's almost as if my ancestors are working through me at times, if that makes sense. And I just allow my intuition, my mind, and my hand to be that conduit of whatever visual story is going to come out of it. So it's like part predetermined, part unknown that mixes in based off of my imagination and I think what's going on with me in that moment.
That's really beautiful. If you were to go back and give yourself some advice when you first started this venture in terms of creating this work, this body of work, and this practice, what kind of advice would you give yourself based on what you've learned thus far?
I would tell myself to not let the pressures of the when get to me. And the when being W-H-E-N. I think even right now, I'm really grateful for the journey that I've been on in the past few years, but it's also kind of like that anxious feeling of, you know, wanting to keep going and wanting to get more exposure, wanting to be in more spaces, wanting to impact people abroad, you know, wanting to get these visual stories out to more people and resonate with more people and help more people. Because every time I have a deep conversation with a client or someone who's interested in my work, I mean, we go deep. Like, I've had conversations with folks who went through rehabilitation and they saw a piece of mine. They say how it brought them so much joy and it reminded them of how they went through rehab and came out renewed. Or I had this, I'm never going to forget, awesome woman who went through breast reduction surgery and how that impacted her as a woman, her femininity, and how she had to like rediscover her femininity from that. And a piece reminded her of that. And she bought it. And she was like, this is for me. She was like, this is my story. And so having those conversations, I want to have more of those. And I hope that my work can help and speak to more people. So it's like that W-H-E-N, that anxiety. I would tell myself to not worry about that so much and just keep focusing on the journey and be in the moment and keep enjoying the journey and not be so pressured about that when.
I don't think I've ever heard that before. Stop worrying about the when. More W-H-E-N. I love it. And there's something to be said about living in the moment and really paying attention to where you are. Oftentimes we think back to those moments and think about how proud we are of ourselves. But when you are in it, you know, when you were starting, you probably weren't thinking about being prideful, right?
Right. Yeah.
So as you've gone along in terms of creating this side career, because you're doing your architecture work you're still working in that profession. When we think about the art side, are there any organizations or resources that have been particularly helpful in your journey?
Oh my goodness. How much time do we have for this interview? No, so many organizations have helped me. Oh my goodness. Like the Black Artists and Designers Guild has been amazing. Local organizations like the Art of Collab. There's so many like curators. Like I'm working with a curator for my solo show going on right now. Amber Steele of Steele House. I mean, the list goes on. There's folks in Chicago. I got people in Arizona. Like everywhere I go, I feel like planting those seeds and nurturing those relationships, like we talked about a little bit earlier, they've all helped me out in so many ways, whether it's been providing me with opportunities to exhibit in their spaces or allowing or putting my name in rooms that I'm not in. You know, I think that is crucial because when you meet someone, your energy with them is so important. I've met absolutely amazing artists with beautiful spirits. And because of that, you know, I want to stay connected with them and vice versa. But I've also met folks who may have beautiful work, but not so beautiful spirits. And so that, you know, you kind of side-eyed that and, you know, you practice discernment. But honestly, like there's been so many local and national organizations and their mission is to help. And I'm very proud to be in their space because they've put myself and so many other emerging artists to the forefront and has helped us succeed and really push forward in our careers.
What are some of your aspirations for your art career moving forward? And I'd love to also hear about how you envision yourself growing as an artist.
One of my biggest goals or visions for my art career moving forward is to be omnipresent in a way. So I definitely want to go abroad. That's one of my biggest goals right now is to get my work and my story abroad to reach others across seas. I'm really looking to work with or collaborate with boutique hotels, organizations that do workshops like on healing, etc. I'm really just trying to get my name and my work out there in many other avenues, magazines. I also want to do more workshops. That's something that I've been working on more this year is really giving back more to the community in a more tactile way, working with the kiddos, getting our future generation exposed to the opportunities that are out there. That's definitely where I see myself going right now.
That's great. Hopefully someone's listening to this and is interested in reaching out to you when they hear one of the following dreams that you have for yourself. How do you like it for people to inquire about purchasing your pieces? Do people normally go directly to your website? Do they go to Instagram? Do they contact you directly?
It's mostly through my website. I try to promote it a lot through social media or, you know, whenever I go to events, I have my business cards and that takes you to my website. Social media is also a big one too. I do get folks who will DM me and they see a piece and they're interested. And then word of mouth, you know, I'll get potential clients who come to me and they've heard of me through another client or through someone who has spoke to me, you know, sometime in the past. Say my main inquiries come from my website.
So I will put all of that in the show notes as well so that people can check out your work and reach out to you directly. Thank you so much for being on the show. Oh my gosh, Dasani, this was a treat.
Thank you, Martine. I really appreciate it. And thank you for letting me share my story with you and for allowing me into the space. It's really amazing what you're doing, for real.